blood is clogged. Producers job. They wanna be down with the crowd. And we back, baby, for another season of the Sacramento Kings Hoopball Podcast here on the Hoopball Podcast Network. I am merely Damian Barling in the presence of the great Joe Adge, your host here of this show. And we welcome in my man Sam Comencie. Now, Sam is here for a variety of reasons, and we're going to tell you why later. First off,
I love a cliffhanger.
That's what you got to know. No, see, it's called a tease.
Gotta hold on for it,
Sam. That's a tease.
Excuse me.
Because this is definitely not a podcast in which you can fast forward to the end and hear that part of the show first and just fast forward to the beginning. See, I'm treating it like it's a radio show and you've got to stick around for the second quarter hour to get the big payoff. I'm a radio professional here, buddy. I'm bringing my radio habits over to the podcast game. I know it makes no sense, but still, we're going to tell you at the end. Jillian.
Back.
That was a pre-show conversation, but Jill, man.
Jill, all of the above.
Where do we start, man? Like we've been absent, which we'll explain later, but dude, what do we start with? Ben Simmons rumors, media day, Tristan Thompson, De'Aaron Fox, Buddy, Marvin. What do you want to start with?
Probably everything but Simmons at this point, nothing has happened there.
I think
everyone knows every possible thing about Simmons. But I just feel bad, like, keep talking about it with these players while they're still here and nothing's actually happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'd much rather talk about the people that are currently present at training camp. I know it's not as much fun, but yeah.
Actually, it kind of is. Like, and I'm fine with officially closing the book on Ben Simmons. It was a lot of fun, Sam. It got us through an off season. It got us through some slow days to pitch some trade ideas and
yeah.
Oh, Ben Simmons for this and Buddy for that. And how could it work? What position would he play? But I think it's time we can move on from that. That's Philly's problem to deal with.
Yeah, I was never a huge Ben Simmons hype train guy. I thought it was more of a pipe dream, which as Sacramento Kings fans, we really fall quickly for pipe dreams, especially when we've been stuck in purgatory for pretty much my whole life. I don't want to reveal my age just yet, but I'm young. And so I don't remember the Kings glory years at all. I'm wearing a J. Will jersey right now. So I like to pretend like I understand what J. Will was like on the court. I never saw it.
I was going to say, were you alive when Jay Will played here?
Like barely. Yeah, I just showed up. And Jay Will was making elbow passes in all-star games and taking the world by storm.
Yeah.
So, I will say, though, the best thing that Simmons gave us so far was the introduction of Tristan Thompson, right? I mean, essentially. I would say, actually, it wasn't really Ben Simmons. It was the Lakers trade. But trade regardless, it was, you know, the Buddy talk of all the trades and the Tristan Thompson inserted himself as the new vet. I mean, it was awesome.
How great is that? Like the trade that everybody was like, what? Wait, why? I don't get it. All of a sudden, Tristan Thompson, you know, we called it on D'Lo and KC, the biggest babyface turn in history where this guy kind of comes in and we have all of these preconceived notions about him, whether it's the, you know, the TMZ stuff, the Kardashian stuff. You know, when you have a relationship with LeBron James, you're saddled with it. Like when you play with LeBron James, you're saddled with it. Every coach that has ever coached LeBron James is saddled with it. Oh, please, you coached LeBron James. That's all you did. Like you didn't. You weren't even the coach. LeBron was the coach. General managers deal with it. Anytime you have that close association, then you got the extra bullet that you're with Clutch Sports. So immediately you've got all of these things. Oh, I don't like this about Tristan Thompson. I don't like this about Tristan Thompson. And as Tristan was talking the other day, I thought, man, we really don't know anything about this dude. Like we know the bare, you know, we know the stuff that I just laid out there. I know that I thought he would have been a great fit in Boston. It didn't work out. But other than that, I don't know much about him.
I had no idea Corey Joseph was his best friend. Like right? That blew my mind today from James Hamm. But hearing the background reasons, like I can totally understand why I'm being from Toronto. But I will say that the headlines that, you know, Tristan has made, or at least like, you know, for the off the court stuff, Kings fans only ever really saw him, what, you know, a game or two a season. Like, he wasn't being on the, in the Eastern Conference. He wasn't someone that we totally saw all the time. But the more research I've done about him and have the articles between past coaches, players, like, everybody loves the guy. Cleveland did a whole, like, top 20 reasons why Tristan Thompson will probably have his jersey possibly retired with the Cavs. Like, I mean, that's not stuff that I would have even considered. But yeah, and then his rebounding numbers. Mm-hmm. When I was looking at him before we started today, last year, even when people said he was bad, right? Like with the Boston, it was a down year for him. He was still in the 91st percentile in offensive rebounds in the league and in the 70th percentile of defensive rebounds in the league. And where did the Kings finish last year in rebounds? 28 out of 30 teams in the league. So like, in that sense, you can see why maybe that, in addition to the, you know, the locker room atmosphere type vet presence, that even though he had a down year, the guy just rebounds the ball. Like, if he can just come in and rebound the ball for 15 minutes, like, to me, that will do wonders on a horrible rebounding team. The same way Len did. I mean, when he was here on his first stint, he was in the 92nd percentile on offensive rebounds and then 88th percentile on defensive rebounding. So just alone, those two guys coming in, unless we just have horrible luck, that should really help, at least on, you know, that side of the ball, which we were so bad on. So
is it just me, or have we been talking about the Kings' woes rebounding for a long time now? Like, this has been their problem. And we've had these conversations that you just had, Jill, not to diminish what you said, because everything was spot on. These guys are rebounders. That's what Thompson does. That's what Len does. That's what Rashawn Holmes does at a high volume. But for me, it's like, I still need to see it. I need to see how these guys work, because I really am scared of a front court combination of Tristan Thompson and Alex Len. That makes no sense to me. How would that work? But they can rebound, and we know they can do that. So that's a relief, because they get bullied too much. And that was one thing about this team last year, and really just been a theme of this team under Luke Walton that I have not enjoyed, which there's a lot of themes under Luke Walton I've not enjoyed. But the main theme is they're cowards a lot of the time. I don't feel like that's maybe a strong word, but they shy away from being aggressive and being the bully. And that's my favorite type of team in any sport, is the bully. I like the team that's rugged, that doesn't back down. They might not even be the better team on the court, but they play harder. They play more aggressive. They're in your face. We need attitude on this team, which is Davion Mitchell. Off night. Right. Go get a guy that's nickname is Off Night. That helps. That fills a big hole right there. So
Mo I'm Harkless, excited about Terrence Davis.
I was just going to say, and Mo Harkless even said that in his interview too. Like, the fact that he even wanted to come back here and that it was exciting to him, to the prospect, similar to what Fox has said before, that of being a part of a team that, like, gets over the hump here of where we're
adversity.
At. Yeah, that, like, it's not something that's a gimme, that it makes it that much sweeter when it really does happen. And his comments about how my job is to come in here and get these guys to want to play defense, that it's fun, that, you know, that he mentioned at the end of the year, you know, when their numbers got better, how much fun you can actually have defense leading to offense and things like that, that it's it doesn't just have to be work. Like, it can be fun work.
Right. No, absolutely. And so I'm excited just about the defensive potential of this team. And the thing that's important to note about this Kings squad is we know they can score. They were a very productive offensive team, which Luke Walton teams, especially Alvin Gentry teams as well, those guys can do that. They can score. They know how to run and gun. They just got to play defense. And Jill, I've seen plenty of your tweets talking about, like, we just need to find guys that care at the very minimum. Show me that you care to play defense. And I'm a Raider fan. That pains me very much to couple that with being a Kings fan. It's just constant torture. But an analogy Raider fans use quite a bit is, we have a great offense as a Raider team. You just got to find some defense. You got to find some balance, and this team can be good. Right now, they're 3-0, and it's because they found a little bit of defense. For the Kings, I think it's the same way. Find me a little bit of defense. Find me a key stop at a key time when we really need to get the ball back, which I didn't feel like we had on the Kings much last year. You can get a little bit of this balance and kind of counter this great offense with just some guys making stops, which you know Mitchell will. I get excited. I get excited about what that team can do. In the West, it's tough, of course. I wish we were just in the Eastern Conference. But there's defensive hope. And if they can grind and they can play aggressive and they can feed off of Harkless and they can feed off of Davion Mitchell, why not us? You know, why can't this be the year?
Yeah, you right. said two interesting things there, Jill. And it feels like, let's start with the defense part first. That's clearly the theme. I mean, everybody from, you know, you go back to before Media Day when it was De'Aaron and Tyrese, Harrison, Davion. Everybody was talking about defense. When Monty McNair took the podium, he was talking about defense. Luke Walton, the same thing. Defense has come up. Now, obviously, it's going to when you draft the player like Davion Mitchell, who got such national attention because of what he was doing defensively in the California Classic. But heading into this season, you know, Jill, a couple of years ago after the Dave Yeager year, it was pace, 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 pace. Tempo, tempo, tempo. Pace almost became a four-letter word.
Keyword,
I don't want to bring that up. Now the word is defense, and that's the word I think everybody's bringing up, and that's actually the word I think the entire fan base wants to hear is defense, defense, defense. And it's great that they're committed to it in this aspect of it, but I know one thing I was talking about on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320 was cool, y'all are talking about it, like, how you gonna feel against Portland, like if Portland goes up 15 on you? Or how you going to feel if you wind up in a shootout for three quarters? You know, like, are you going to remain committed to the defensive end? Is this a till death do us part situation? Yeah. Are you going to be able to maintain that consistency?
Yeah. Well, and I think that was kind of the most frustrating thing last year is even at the beginning of the year, you saw it. And then even for flashes when they'd have the like 8-game winning streak, right? You would see it. And then all of a sudden it would be nowhere for what, 9 straight games. That I think Tristan might have even mentioned this, but he might have just talked about runs during a game. But if you can prevent the 9-game losing streaks, like the same way you can prevent, you know, giving up 8 points in a row, if you can, you know, get 3 wins, 2 losses, like if you can just minimize the long stretches of losses, you can keep yourself around, right? Like, and at that point at the end, you just want to keep yourself around. I think on the offensive side, I saw that they finished in the top half of the league for the first time in a decade. So if you can keep your offense where you're at, right? And we didn't have too many changes, you know, regarding like the main core-ish, and then the extra pieces. But again, like in 15 seasons, we have not had a defense that's under 20. We've always been in the top 20s. And 20 is not even average. Like, that's not even the middle of the pack. Like, if you can just be 20 or like low 20s, you're giving yourself a shot. So even just a little bit below average, you're giving yourself a shot. Like, not the worst in league history. And that's my thing too. Like, at some point, you have to be sick of being a joke, right? Like a punchline. Because even during the offseason, it was, anytime someone talked about the Kings, it was, that team with the worst, you know, defense in NBA history. I think depending on what site you looked at, one had them finishing worst, and then one was like a little bit underneath worst.
Yeah.
So regardless, you're one of the two worst in league history. At some point, like personally, wouldn't you have a chip on your shoulder, like not wanting to be a part of that? I mean, just, I know you're making your money still, but like, I mean, I wouldn't want to be associated with that. Like that's, I mean, when that's all your team is known for, no one's talking about that you finished in the top half of the offense in the league at all because you were that bad on defense. Now, it's going to be ugly if they keep talking about defense and we don't see any kind of improvement. That's where there is a big bullseye, right, on them, because like you mentioned at the end of last year, it was, we're going to have assistants work individually with these guys, which we saw a lot of that over the summer in their LA camps, and they worked with Detroit and Toronto and things like that for, I made a joke that they had a camp for the lottery teams to try and improve. But essentially, I mean, that's what they're doing. And so you got rid of the scapegoat of the defense last year left in Rex. You have Mike now, who has a great resume, similar to the resume that, Rex had. And one thing I loved is I kept asking, hey, can we sign Steve Clifford to take over the defense? Well, they signed Mike, and that whole Kevin Bacon circle was Steve Clifford was the first person to give Mike a job in college as a coach. So in a certain way, we got a piece of Steve Clifford. But yeah, at some point, we can't just keep blaming the same people over and over. Like on the court, they're going to have to show it, regardless of the moves that were made or not made. This is your team, and you at some point have to take pride in it and show it. Because after 15 years again, if it comes out and it bombs, it's not going to be pretty.
I just appreciate the Kevin Bacon circle. That was solid. that was solid right there.
That went over my head. So I'm gonna pretend like I understood what that was. I know who Kevin Bacon is.
He has so that. There's that separation. Thing of that. That's yes.
Okay. It's just a different way of saying 6 degrees of separation. Are you familiar with that term, Young Samuel?
Yeah, I've heard it.
Okay.
And again, big fan of Kevin Bacon. So
it's a thing where like isn't? Literally everybody exactly. can. The joke is that no matter who you are or any name that someone throws out, there's 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon. And so his name has just been like,
you're going to teach me so much, Jill. I can already see that. Not just Kingswise, just like life lessons.
Life-wise.
I'm going to write that down. Bookmark that. Use that on my parents.
That's solid. Oh, they'll appreciate
they'll
it.
They'll get
too.
It. They'll get it.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
They'll totally get it. It also feels like there's a, well, you mentioned, I should say you left out another defensive name that I think a lot of Kings fans are rightfully so really excited about. Douglas Dale.
Yeah, I think he's going to have more of an impact. Talking about a guy that these kids.
You are here to hop on, by the way, Sam.
That is true.
Jill will teach you that. That's
fine. Jill was, that was her
because
point.
Because I will keep going. Go.
Like, I know where Damian's going with this. I'm gonna take the lead. Doug is going to, like, demand respect. Well, he already has their respect. He's going to demand attention. He's very well-spoken. Something that I've always, and this might just be the communications major in me, but something that I've always respected the most about coaches, and you can tell the coaches that don't have this, is the ability to communicate. And Luke Walton, to his credit, is excellent at communicating. And that's why these players liked him. That is why they spoke up after the season and said, we like Luke. You know, we're not winning and that's our fault. And for players to do that and take accountability, it shows obviously a huge level of respect and also acknowledgement that we for the players are like, this isn't really his fault. This is our mess. We need to clean it up. He's here to guide us. And that's what a coach is. He's a guide. And for Luke, yeah, I wish the guy was a little bit more savvy with X's and O's. I wish he would try things differently every now and again, or not try things at all that he sometimes is persistent on. But he gets these guys to like him. And that's the first step if you're going to be a successful coach. And that's why Doug Christie is already, in my opinion, a successful coach. Because these guys like him. They respect him. They know what he means to the city of Sacramento. And I mean, I hope someone in some sort of meeting, first thing they did when Doug entered the room was just pull up him punching Rick Fox in the face. I hope that was something that they just showed a highlight of, because I love that highlight. Again, era of Kings basketball. It's before me. But just like the fact that he took a stand, you know, that's what you need out of these guys. You need someone to be an enforcer. And if anyone's going to teach these Kings players to be an enforcer, hopefully not swing on them. We don't need that. But to be an enforcer, heck yeah, it's Doug Christie. I want 6 Doug Christies in the gym helping these guys. So I'm fired up about his presence.
And one thing we always talk about is, at least for the Kings, right, when you don't have these stars, it's you have to do all the little things, right? And Doug Christie made a career out of doing the little things.
Yep.
He can explain to the same way that Bagley was saying, he's teaching me little things. It's this is why. And then there were even people making jokes like, why does he even have to tell him anything? You know, he's already in the league. Well, at this point, you have coaches that will tell you to do things, but not every coach explains why you're doing something. He will explain why. And if you keep doing XYZ, you will get this. If you keep doing this, he's going to do this, and then you can do this. And next time, maybe you will get him this way. Like, he will explain why you're doing certain repetition things, not just, oh, we're just here to make you do it for the hell of it. Like, he will at least explain the results of why, which I think for young players that maybe they can, you know, grasp things that, again, like Bagley was saying, that, oh, I never thought of it that way before, or I never had a coach tell me this is why I was doing this, you know, for the last 5 years. And I, you know, now finally it was explained why. Maybe I'll care about it a little bit more or something, like, or I'll put more effort into a screen. I'll put a little bit more, you know, effort into a certain kind of move or play offensively or defensively. And then you also have a guy where he wasn't always what he was with Toronto or the Kings, like, coming into the league. Like, he had to work to get there. It wasn't handed to him. So again, hearing from guys like that, where it's, yeah, I know being around, you know, Hall of Famers and stars and all like that is cool. But to me, there's something about learning and hearing from a guy that literally had to work his ass off to get where he was and to have that respect that he does. Why wouldn't you not eat all of that up?
And he's just always full of energy. And this team, on those losing streaks, they look like they had, I mean, they didn't look like, they did not have energy. They lost it. They had lost their hope. They lost their passion. It seemed that's what was so frustrating, was like, you guys are better than this. Like, why do you not care? And Doug Christie would say that on air. Be like, this is your job. You're getting paid to do this and play for the Sacramento Kings to represent the city. Why don't you care? So now, great, take them off the broadcast bench and set them on your actual bench and be like, tell that to them right now during the game. And maybe we won't go losing streak.
And now you can have a practice, right? Like, after a game, you can have a practice to show them something, where I think people forget last year too. Like, I think it was maybe 3-4 practices the whole year. It was something crazy like that. I mean, now these guys are actually going to get to practice after something bad happens or something good, but at least you can go over the film and then show them on the court. Like, it's not just, oh, here, watch the film. Now I'm expecting you to go be able to just turn it around.
Doug can hoop still too. Like, there's no doubt that Doug can go out there and cross up some of these kids and make them feel a little like, oh man, I just got schooled by a 40 something year old.
But also Doug has the ability to explain stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, some of the conversations, particularly like out of the radio studio and on the floor, when he was a broadcaster, I would ask him, hey, why is so-and-so doing this? Or why is this person working on that? And he would like the way he explains it, I could understand it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think that's such a valuable thing, because I'm comfortable in putting my basketball IQ at zero. You know what I mean? And when you, especially in comparison to NBA players. So even if you think you have that's why I'm very, very careful to not, I really work hard to not say, well, this person has a low basketball IQ. People say that about Buddy all the time. I've had people who work within the organization say that too. He's not the basketball IQ wise. He's just kind of not there. Well, one thing I know, Buddy's got a sharper basketball IQ than I do. So if Doug Christie is explaining something to me and I understand, he sure as hell is going to be able to, a player in the league is going to be able to understand it. And I think sometimes coaches have these complex ways to explain things because it was explained to them in a complex way. And when it's relayed like that, sometimes you're left there like, huh? You don't always, it's difficult to grasp that stuff. And with Doug, like, I never left with, I have no, I just asked the simple question. I never walked away from Doug like that. I walked away with a complete understanding of why the Kings were doing something or why a specific player was doing something. And I know, Jill, I know you had to have, Sam, if you were listening, I know it caught all our attention when Marvin Bagley started talking about Doug Christie, because it suddenly became if there's one guy could get through to him, it's going to be Doug.
Well, if there's one guy that seemingly to us on the outside and to so many Kings fans that doesn't seem to just buy into anything that's being presented to him in Sacramento, it's Marvin Bagley. It's this guy that, you know, from my perspective, I'm always just perplexed. You know, Vlade believed in him. He made him the number two overall pick. Blew up mock drafts because everyone thought Luka was going there. Originally, when they got the second pick in the lottery, the rumors were it's either Luka or Ayton, right? That was the two choices that they were saying. Like, the Kings aren't going to do anything other than that. Then Bagley came in for the workout. He impressed. Vlade mistakenly thought that just because he worked out in front of him, that should be the reason to take the guy because Luka didn't want to come. We don't need to go down that path. Everyone knows that. The point being, Marvin, like, was always, I feel like, supported, at least by those in the organization when he got there. But he didn't show that on the court. He acted like nobody had his back, like nobody was in his corner. I had his back the first year. I remember seeing the 360 alley-oop dunk and Jerry Reynolds' iconic holy moly Jim Bob Boley call, and I laughed out loud, like in a bar. I was like, oh my God, that's funny. Why did he say that? But it was like so perfect in that moment, and it was just like excitement. That was Jerry Reynolds who oozes excitement. That was his excitement for Marvin, and we feel that for Marvin. I still do. But it's just like, how do you bring that out of him? I think Doug Christie, you're right, Damon. I think Doug Christie's the guy to draw that out, because if you can get energetic and caring Marvin Bagley, the talent's there. There's never been a question about the talent, right? He's just incredible. He's a double-double machine. How do I get you to care, Marvin? How do I get you to care, especially on defense, where you just, like, buddy, kind of zone out every now and again? Doug's the guy. Doug is absolutely the guy.
And Jill, I think there's also something to be said for the relatability, if that's the right word to phrase this, to Doug, and that Doug's not like a coaching lifer. It's not like he's bounced around from team to team as an assistant and a specialist and all of this stuff. He's just a guy who understands basketball, who knows basketball,
and wants it,
and was really, really good at one particular end of basketball, which just so happens to be this franchise's biggest weakness. I think players can relate to that more. I think it's difficult when you have a guy like, you know, I think we were talking about Dwayne on the post show with James Hamm today. It's more difficult to relate to guys who have been coaches for 30 years. Guys who have been coaches for longer than some of the players have been alive. I think there's a difficulty to that. With Doug is like, yeah, I know basketball. I can come coach it. They can absolutely relate to that. And he's already been around every member of this team before. They're familiar with him as a player. So I think there's also that aspect of it as to where maybe even subconsciously players might be a little bit more locked into him, because immediately upon seeing him, they feel like they can relate to him easier.
Yeah. What was it day one where his dad called Deuce? Like, they were on Deuce and
Tyrese Halliburton's dad.
Their YouTube podcast show, yeah. And like literally live as he's like, oh, I gotta go, Tyrese's dad is calling me. And Mo's like, okay, like, I'll take over for a second. And then he came back, but all he wanted to talk about was how excited he was that Doug Christie was going to be added to the staff and everything that Hallie could learn from him. Like,
yeah,
if that doesn't tell you like how excited, right, that these players' parents, let alone players, are excited to have that kind of guy around you, I don't know what more of a I don't know.
That's a pretty solid cosign.
I mean, that's,
yeah, that's a pretty solid cosign, right?
Because I know people were making the joke that, like, oh, because of the timing when it came out, obviously, of during free agency and stuff, like, that was their big one. But I mean, we can make all the jokes, but if players are that excited about it, like, there's no reason not to be excited about it.
Yeah, to build off that real quick, Jill, you liked a tweet earlier. You might have retweeted it, actually, and it got my attention because it was something positive about the Sacramento Kings. And my eyes are always drawn to that. I almost can't believe it at first. I'm like, did he mean to say that? Jason Wise tweeted, and he works for the Kings, said that I've been around the team for 16 seasons, and I've never seen the team this happy during a media day in training camp. And
he's been around for all the bad stuff, right?
Like, right. So 16 seasons.
He knows
so
when things are. When
that's the entire playoff drought, is it not? 16 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you obviously got to take that a little bit with a grain of salt. But I read that several times over and over again, honestly. And I was like, that makes me happy. That makes me happy that I get to read that and see that, because that a big part of that's Doug Christie. A big part of that is a little bit of continuity. The guys coming in, of course, are infectious, especially Davion. So it's like, if these guys are already in that phase where they're like, we like each other, this is fun, great. Obviously, yeah, there's a whole long season ahead of you. Now back to 82 games. You don't get 10 less. You get the full slate. But you got fans. Like, this is exciting. And it's huge that they start out strong, too. They take that energy out on the court, and hopefully they show us something in preseason on Monday.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And even in Holmes' interview, like, I think it was yesterday, he was saying how they were talking over the offseason about, like, how much they just want to break this streak. Like, I know we hear it all the time, but, like, these are – core returning guys who are just like, hey, like, we want to do this. Like, they were working over the summer, like, doing what they needed to do, excited to be back. Like, we make fun of the whole basketball hell and all that stuff, but, like, these are guys that actually chose to come back. We don't always say that about, you know, guys, and we didn't really have to overpay anybody to actually come back. Like, yeah, that's a huge, you know, pro that normally guys are saying how excited they are to come here because they just got a huge check. Like, yes, these guys got big checks, but no one was actually, in our sense of the, you know, the term, mm-hmm, overpaid to actually, yeah, come back. So, I mean, it's nice to see. It's nice to hear. Yes, we all go in with trepidation, like, but it's, you know, I always hope for the best, expect the worst. Like, that's, you know, life of a Kings fan. But I'm always going to go positive and said, you know, until they show me negative, like,
so, well, like, why, after the first, you know, game,
why, yeah, whether that's people no, want to say that's stupid or not, like, I don't care. Well, I'm a fan for them for a reason, right? Like, I'm gonna be positive until they show me negative.
There's no reason to be negative right now. That's the thing. Like, that's what that's what baffles me sometimes about these, you know, conversations we have on the air and on social media and all of that. It's, oh, we didn't do enough. Oh, but Bagley's still here. But it's like, yo, this team seems to be pretty committed. Like, they've got a bunch of guys here. Oh, it's the same roster. We're winning it back. Like, nah, fam, it's really not. Like, the team went through a bit of a change at the trade deadline last year. They added Tristan Thompson. Now that might be not the acquisition that you like, but they added Alex Lynn. Again, that might not be the acquisition you like, but it's not the same exact roster that's running it back, and it's certainly not the same roster that started at the beginning of last year. So you have guys who are here, Terrence Davis, Mo Harkless, back for a run here with the Kings. Alex Lynn took some time away, but came back to the Kings. You know, there's no reason to be down on this. And I'm with Jill in that. If you want to be down on it, like, at least let them do something to be down on. Like, right now, Buddy's saying all the right things. You can argue whether he's being genuine or not. There was nothing disingenuous, at least to me, about Buddy Hield nor Marvin Bagley. I'm positive about both of those guys. And I would think Kings fans would run a route. Again, Jill and I, we've talked about this for years. Don't tell other people how to fan. Do your thing. But, man, Buddy's success means King's success. Marvin's success means King's success.
Right.
Why not root for their success? Because that ultimately means the Kings are doing well.
100%.
And I think that's what we all want, Sam.
No, it obviously is. And it's funny to me, the roller coaster. The Kings have always taken us on. I mean, as a team, they've taken us on this roller coaster. But talk about Buddy and Marvin. Those are two guys that Kings are just up and down and up and down. I mean, when they acquired Buddy Hield, I remember everyone was pro Buddy. I mean, then he came out and in his first game, I think he had like 16 points or something off the bench. He showed that he was a great scorer. He could move really well off the ball. People were excited. They're also excited to get rid of DeMarcus and start like this whole new chapter. But Buddy was the guy. And then you got the big contract extension. That wasn't by accident. It was because he had a great year. And he is a prolific scorer. And in the NBA, there is a premium on premier scores. Obviously, Danny Green's getting paid way too much money because he can shoot a really good three ball and play a little bit of defense. That's what Buddy needs to do now, is play a little bit of defense, pass the ball a little bit better. When you're shooting above 40% consistently from three and you make like every free throw, yeah, there's a spot for you on the court. What I hope the Kings can do this year, my big goal for this team, because we've been hammering at culture and the importance of culture and buying in, being aggressive, listening to what's being sold to you. Just look last year. The New York Knicks went into last season with pretty much the same roster that they had the year before. They signed some aggressive, like, defending role players, Reggie Bullock, Nerlens Noel. Mm-hmm. But they kept the guys that they already had. And they're like, here's this coach and his amazing assistant coaching staff with Johnny Bryant, who's a young, kind of like Rigo Hines, but he's much younger, I guess more like a Doug Christie, that the players really liked and could relate to. Then Mike Woodson was back on the bench as the associate head coach. He'd been around the league for a while, kind of like an Alvin Gentry. And these guys bought in. They bought in, and suddenly this team that was atrocious for so long had become one of the top defensive teams in the league, and they would fly around the ball. I mean, I would love watching highlights about the Knicks just to watch their defense. I knew that they could shoot. I knew they could score and get it down low. But, oh, my God, out of nowhere, this team was locked down. They were off night, but five of them.
Yeah.
So if that can happen for them with just a little bit of a reboot in terms of the people preaching to the players, and then obviously some players added in, why not us? Why can't the Kings be that? The Kings are due. The Knicks were due. They got their due. Now the yep. Kings are due. I believe if things fall into place that they can at least go that trajectory where these guys all of a sudden are really, really bought in. That's what makes me – that's my goal. That's my goal for this season. Just show me that.
Right. And that's in that same kind of sense where – you have people talking about Monty, like with the Suns. Yes, they did the whole Chris Paul thing, but similar to the Knicks, like the other four guys and the rest of the team still had to buy in, right? To what was Monty being Williams. Sold. Yeah.
Yeah.
From Jones to Monty to Chris Paul, like the rest of the teams that you still had a bottom tier team that bought in, right? That they all had to have the, we were talking about the basketball IQ, like that, how he can increase, right, in a lineup like that. Of just people credit Chris Paul for saying that this is why you do this, right? I'm going to have you do this because I'm going to do this, and you're going to be able to then do this because of that. That if those kind of things where I know people are upset that, you know, we didn't get that big free agent signing, but again, similar to the Knicks situation, if you have guys that buy in and just do it, there were people that were calling for Jones's job in Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I think he won Executive of the Year, or he was right up there. Yeah. But like, so it just takes the guys on the court, right, buying in and showing it that people are, you know, upset at Monty or, you know, whatever, for not making that many moves, or at least some are, not all. But if this team can actually show it, then it doesn't really matter what you think of his lack of moves or moves, that if these guys buy in and put it on the court, then, you know, it is what it is. And I think one of the big things that people were upset at him last year was the depth, and they seem to add some of the depth, right? We saw it at the deadline, and we saw it here, where to me, I like that he's not overpaying anyone. I liked his, you know, small trades. He added depth, some rebounding.
I like Lewis
really
King.
The only thing I don't like, is that there hasn't really been that medium to big size trade, but not for him not being aggressive, right? We saw two failed ones that had those two trades that failed gone through, no one would be talking anything bad about him at all, right? I mean, it would be job well done all the way around. So again, I know people will be upset that I'm not going hardcore on him, but at this point, I think he's done an average to decent job, minus that like big move. But again, doesn't really matter what we say. If they show it on the court at the end of the day, we'll be happy. Like, again, be like Damian was saying, I'm trying to be positive until they show me something negative. Now, if it all falls apart on the court, then yeah, he's going to get blamed for it, right? Like, that's how it works.
But Sam, before you jump in, there's one thing that I really like about Monty, and you mentioned the two failed trades. It's Dante DiVincenzo, mm-hmm. Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell. Regardless, when you look at the failed aspect of what Monty McNair, it's the players, but it's the direction. The direction has not deviated.
Right.
Look at DiVincenzo, right? Montrezl Harrell. I'm going to leave Kyle Kuzma out because he doesn't really fit in this, but Montrezl Harrell was a part of it. You need a score back. Kyle Kuzma, it's fine. It's not knocking him. But then you look at Mo Harkless, and you look at Terrence Davis, and you look at Alex Lynn, and you're starting to look like, okay, Monty clearly has a vision of what he wants with this team. It's a defensive team. It's a tough gritty team. Even along the trades that didn't go through, he stuck to that vision and has not deviated from it. For so long, this team had no vision. For so long, this team had no foresight. They would see something shiny in front of them and go, oh, let's get that. But it'd be like, no, wait a minute. That doesn't fit what you're going to have next year and the year after. Oh, no, but I want that right now. And they go get it. And it's like, well, that didn't work. And right. No matter what, through good or bad, and Monty has had quite a bit of unique things happen here during his short tenure as the GM, he has stuck to his vision. And that's what I like the most.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely am not understanding of the Monty McNair slander. We're so impatient as Kings fans that we expect immediate results. He came from the Rockets organization, which is, you know, they frame everything around, let's go for it now. Like, let's do this big trick, this big trick, let's blow everything up. Like, they're impatient. The Rockets are. So the Kings thought that's what we were getting with McNair, was a perfectly impatient general manager to make this a quick switch. What I wrote down here, I wrote a couple notes before coming on. And a big thing I figured we might get to is like building consistency when it comes to the Kings. Like, how do they do that? I think Monty McNair's best move was by not making the best move. His best move was sitting on it, you know, deciding I'm gonna play the margins and build this roster inward. Every general manager and management that's come in for the Kings in this drought, one of the first things they try to do is make that big trade, excite people. Rudy Gay traded, like, you know, a month in Vivek Ranadive's tenure, Pete D'Alessandro, because they were wanting to go for it in their first year as ownership. DeMarcus Cousins traded after Vlade takes over. It's this constant, like, cycle that these general managers are trying to, like, we're going to fix it right now. You can't do that. You can't fix a team that's been in this position for this long with one move. It's a flurry of moves. And so what I like about McNair, and he said this when he decided to retain Luke Walton, keep him as his guy. He said, I want to build consistency. I want things to stay the same for more than just 1 year, because that's what the problem is. The problem isn't the Kings' lack of trying. It's not the lack of talent. They had Isaiah Thomas, Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins in a starting lineup. Those are three all-star players that were in one lineup at one time and could score. Didn't mean anything because there was no consistency. There was no head man that stayed in place. There was no general manager that stayed in place. This team needs a sound voice that just stays put. So I applaud Monty McNair for being like, I'm not going to do the things my predecessors did. I'm not going to make something rash. I'm not going to do something, you know, just really quick without thinking it through. I'm going to take my time. And I'm excited about that from him more than anything, Damian, is that he's not going to be a rash general manager. He's going to take his time. That's fine by me. I have time.
Yeah. 100%. And by adding the depth he did, especially with Walton being on the last year of his contract, right? That to me, it's not so much about what roster compared to what, like, these guys are making, right? You're making all this money, so that means you have to be a starter, right? This team very much seems like now, where I think Walton even said this, and this is the first time I've heard him say this, that we have a standard that we're going to set. If you're not playing at that standard, we have someone now behind you on the bench that will gladly come in and play that standard because they don't want to be on the bench anymore. I think that, right, that the time of we have to wait it out, you know, we can't have this person upset, like that's over, right? That it's either you're going to play like this or you're not playing, because at this point, Walton, his staff, like, no, I don't think anyone's going to accept less than what the standard they're setting right now, that if you want to be on the court, you have to buy in, you have to play this kind of way, or we'll sit you regardless of, right, whatever you're making. And that's hasn't really happened here much, right, over this whole drought. So I'm interested to see if he sticks by that, if that ends up happening, that if they end up having to make some of those hard decisions, like he did a couple years ago when he sat Buddy and started Bogdanovich, right? You know, that
Buddy probably, again. Sit him again.
You know, it's, and so, and even I think James on your show today, Damian, said that he feels that the message has already been sent that it's either you're the starting small forward or you're coming off the bench, that, that Hallie's the guy. And I think that's the first time James actually said that, where over the summer he was saying he thought that would be the case, but he said he thinks that that message has been delivered. Again, we'll wait and see. But the fact that he was saying that really caught my attention and was like, okay. Which to me, I think we're a better team if you have a Buddy and a Bagley, like with Mitchell, you know, coming off the bench. Like our big thing was you're always going backwards, right? As usual, you take your starters out, but our backward was like way backward. It's if you can find a mesh of where you're not coming too far back when you have to put your bench in, then, you know, I think that'll help. And I think putting Buddy next to Davion would really help, because I was looking it up and Buddy's best defensive stints statistically were with DeLon, was when he was playing with a defensive forward point guard. I would like to see how he then fares with a defensive point guard in off night. But say, and Bagley was part of that lineup as well, just for FYI, that both of them had better defensive statistic when they were with Wright and when they were with Harkless. So I actually wouldn't mind kind of seeing that mixed around. So, yeah.
I think, sorry, Damien, go ahead.
No, you're good, man. Go ahead. I was just going to say it's stuff to be excited about.
No, and I was just going to quickly say that they got to check their egos at the door with Marvin and with Buddy. And that's what we're hearing is happening. You know, we're not taking this anymore. You're not going to be a little prima donna about things. Be happy with your role. And it's easier said than done. And for Buddy, for sure, because he has that contract. He had been the starter for so long. But Buddy was so amazing off the bench, Joe, like you said, when they started making that run back before the pandemic shut down the rest of the season. He was perfect as a sixth man, because that's what he is. He's a sixth man. He's a scorer. He comes off the bench. He drops in a bunch of buckets. He goes and sits down. He does it again in 10 minutes. And Marvin, as someone that can run and gun and get rebounds for you, block some shots, but not really play a whole lot of great defense, also perfect for a second unit. That's not complicated to me, but it's complicated when you factor in these guys' egos and like who they believe they are as people, as players, as athletes. Marvin's helicopter dad involved. But Marvin and Buddy, to me, their best fit on this team in this season, off the bench with Davion. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think Fox, it's a lot of it's going to have to come from Fox, right? Fox is saying and doing all the right things, and he's improved his body and strength. And we know what he can do on the offensive side. If we can see that leap on the defensive end, I mean, I don't know how anybody else wouldn't buy in at that point. I mean, right? Like it's, you see how excited they get when he goes off on the offensive side. Like if he can do that on defense, which is what we all thought, you know, he was coming in, because he showed that defense in college and we see bits and pieces of it right here. If he can do that consistently, there's going to be a lot to be excited about.
There definitely is. And there's going to be a lot to be excited about as it pertains to the HoopBall podcast, the Sacramento Kings HoopBall podcast. My sincerest apologies that we haven't been posting more regularly. That is 1,000% on me. It's not on Jill. It's just my schedule. I can make excuses as to why it has happened. There's no point in doing that. It just has. But we're going to fix that, because it's not fair to Jill, who has so much to offer Kings fans. It's not fair to Brew and Dan and everybody at the HoopBall podcast family. And most importantly, it's not fair to the people who listen to this show and come here for Kings news, which is why you're hearing my man Sam here. Sam is going to step in, and he's going to be working with Jill moving forward here on the HoopBall podcast. I'll still be around, available whenever these two want me to jump on. But
he'll
Jill
be making
and Sam,
appearances throughout the season.
Whenever Jill wants me, she knows I'll be here. Just like whenever I come calling and begging for her to be on the radio show, she's there for me. So, I'm still going to be here. But Jill and Sam are going to be handling these duties here on the HoopBall podcast moving forward. That will allow more podcasts to be posted. That will allow more Kings content for you, and that will allow more people to know the brilliance of Jill Adge, and my man Sam Kaminsky. So Sam, we're thrilled that you're here. Just a quick backstory: Sam had been on me about joining the Be Her podcast platform for a while, and it kind of became, you know, what are you thinking? What do you want to do? And he didn't really have anything in mind. And I had just kind of started with Jill, and Jill, like I've told this to you a million times before, Jill breathed life back into me with this podcast, because when I started going at ESPN, it just became, man, we really take pride in how we cover the Kings at 1320. And to stop, take a breather, hit the reset button, and come back and do it again was only fun because I was working with you, Jill. And I didn't want to give up the podcast at the time. But as, you know, the 1320 YouTube channel took off, and now that we're getting ready to get into another season, I know that I'm hindering your ability to do what you love and do what you do great. So I, you know, Sam had hit me up again, and it was like, okay, Sam, I'm turning my baby over to you. This HoopBall podcast is pretty dope, man. It's been fun, and the audience that Jill and I have been able to build together is just extraordinary. And I'm happy to turn things over to you guys and let you run things here through the season and post all sorts of great content. You know, I'll be listener number one, man, of thousands that will be listening. I will be listener number one.
Yeah, it's to give my just little two cents. It's almost like I'm not someone that goes speechless very often, Damian, but when you had offered this to me originally, I went speechless, and I didn't think I even texted you.
I was speechless when when Jill finally said yes, because I had been asking Jill to do it for a while. When she finally said yes, I was speechless. So I get to feel it.
It's just a big circle here of just everyone making each other speechless. I think I called my mom first and I was like, guess what? Like, this is so cool. And then I was like, I should probably text it back and tell them I want this. But I was like, big news. And so this is something I'm not going to take lightly. I've purposely made an effort to clear out some of my schedule just to make sure I have the time to sit with Jill and ramble and share all of our Kings insight. And I'm excited. I'm excited where we can take this. Of course, you're not out of the picture in any way, shape, or form, Damian. I was really in awe when I first opened up this little Zoom that we have going here and saw both you guys finally, like, not in person. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet, but in some face-to-face interaction. Right. I was like, wow, this is happening. This is awesome. These are two people I followed on Twitter for so long that know sports, that know the Kings more than anybody else. So just to be in your presence, both of you, it's an honor for me. And I'm very excited to take this and run with it with Jill. And we're gonna have a great season. I am so stoked.
And we'll be back on Monday.
And we will be back on Monday. We're ready to start pumping some stuff out. Let's do it, Jill.
But yeah, we'll keep you guys up to date on the new schedule. We're working it out. But expect multiple episodes from us during the week. And Damian, Jill, I love you. And
I love you to
Sam,
death.
Sam, super excited.
Super excited. To
death, but yeah, Jill, you'll see the three of us together, you know, special parts during the season. But we're ready to get going.
Yeah, absolutely.
You heard Jill. Be back here Monday on the Sacramento Kings podcast presented by HoopBall and the HoopBall Podcast Network.